Hello, in this audio clip, we're going to do a quick thought experiment or thought exercise related to the U.S. Constitution, and the intent is to reveal some of the glaring weaknesses in the document. And the thought exercise will be done around the Ten Commandments. And even if you're not a believer in God or the Bible, I believe that by listening to this, you will see some of the general absolute principles related to a sound framework of a true government that are missing in the U.S. Constitution. So one of the reasons why I was thinking about that, the Ten Commandments and the U.S. Constitution, is that it's something that I've been hearing ever since I was a kid, and how the Founding Fathers built this Judeo-Christian tradition and this Judeo-Christian nation and this holy constitution around God, the Bible, and the Ten Commandments. And some of you may have heard controversies in the past about the attempts to take Ten Commandment monuments out of courthouses and how everybody's been fighting about that. Some people trying to keep the monuments in the courthouse and some people trying to get them out. But in a certain sense, it's as if the whole debate about those things is moot. Because if you think about it, there is a lot of doubt as to how much the Ten Commandments really influenced the writing of the Constitution. And I know that this is a bit shocking to American conservative Christians, because they have that ingrained thought that the Constitution is some sort of a natural outflow of those commandments. So let's see how much of an outflow it really is. If you talk to people on the street and ask them, name one of the Ten Commandments, even though most people have a very hard time listing all 10, I would dare say that the commandment that people would remember the most off the top of their head is thou shalt not kill, which I prefer to say or read as thou shalt not murder, because obviously in the Bible there is a clear justification for certain types of killings. So not all killings are considered a violation of the commandment. As you can recall, for example, that David killed Goliath, and that was not considered a bad thing in the Bible. And Samson killed a lot of Philistines, so that was considered okay in the Bible. And Joshua, when he led the army of the Israelites into the Promised Land and attacked Jericho, he killed off the entire city, the population of the entire city, and that was not considered a violation of that commandment. So there is a distinction between murder and killing, but that's not the intent of this clip to decipher what is murder and what is killing. But at least we can all agree that there's a general concept of what murder is, and that that is not valid according to that commandment. So let's ask ourselves, if the U.S. Constitution is really based on the Ten Commandments, where, in what amendment, what article, is the thou shalt not murder principle revealed or delineated? And if you read the whole document, you will see that there really is absolutely no word on murder or killing. And the closest thing that you can find is in two different places. And you can find it if you first evaluate the commandment of thou shalt not murder and see what is the underlying message behind that commandment. And if you think about it, that commandment is inferring or implying that every human being has a right to his or her own life. So if someone comes and kills or murders that person, the murderer is violating a very fundamental right of the person, of the victim. That victim had a right to his or her own life, and it was unfairly or unjustly taken from him or her. So there's a trespassing, a violation of a fundamental right, and it's the right to life. So if you then, if you translate that commandment from thou shalt not murder to every human being has an intrinsic right to life, then you can start finding this commandment in the Constitution, but it's in a very subtle way. The first place where you can find it would be in the famous Fifth Amendment. But if you read the text of that Fifth Amendment, you will see that it's really kind of a very subtle hint at the right to life without really going into it. Let me just quickly read here. In the Fifth Amendment, it talks about, you know, the famous double jeopardy rule. And then it says, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So it's a very quick reference to someone not being deprived of life. But who is the person that the amendment is referring to? It's basically the government. It's this Fifth Amendment is in the context of being put on trial and your rights when you are on trial. So it's talking about the government not killing you without a justification. In other words, if you're not really, if you're not gone through due process, and you've not been convicted of a crime, then the government cannot kill you. That's basically what it's saying. But it doesn't say anything about a regular citizen killing you. And then in the 14th Amendment, there's another reference to the right to life, but also in a very kind of tangential way. Let me read part of that amendment. It says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So basically, it's more or less saying the same thing as the Fifth Amendment, in the sense that it's emphasizing that the government, whether it be federal or state, cannot deprive any person of life without due process. In other words, the government can't kill you if there is no justification, no legal justification for it, if you have not been convicted after going through a due process. So again, it doesn't say anything about your rights to have your life preserved when a non-government entity is coming against you. And also you have to take into account that the 14th Amendment was written in 1868, and it was 3 years after the end of the Civil War, and the intent of the 14th Amendment was to protect the rights of former slaves who were being oppressed by the South, which was unwilling to recognize what had happened and was stubbornly insisting on oppressing black people. And therefore the Republicans at that time made an effort to put in this 14th Amendment to have some sort of legal weaponry to be able to go after the states who were violating the rights of black people. So if you can see, then the historical context is not, it's related to something completely different from the fundamental principle of right to life. And in the Fifth Amendment, again, this just tangential reference to the right to life is done in the context of something else. So if those are the only two places where the right to life is just even so much as mentioned, that tells you something fundamentally wrong with the document, especially when we're talking about it. Of such a fundamental right. And if you think about it, considering that these are the only two places that mention that right, you could say and be totally correct in saying that according to the Constitution, it wouldn't be an unconstitutional or a violation of your constitutional rights if someone murders you. So if someone comes and kills you unjustly, technically that person did not violate your constitutional rights, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about a private citizen murdering another private citizen. And on top of that, not only doesn't it say anything about the right to life, it's very ambiguous or very unclear about what that right to life entails. And I personally believe that the right to life goes beyond just the right to hold or maintain your biological existence. The right to life covers many more areas. If you are being censored, if you're being oppressed, and you don't have freedom of movement, freedom of speech, then in a sense they are killing you softly, as Roberta Flack would say. They're killing you in a subtle way, but they are taking away your life, even though they're not physically killing you. And yes, those concepts are in the Constitution, obviously, in the First Amendment. But again, if you go to the First Amendment, you just see this laundry list of things that that you're supposedly entitled to. And without realizing it, the people who wrote this this paragraph on in the First Amendment were talking about the right to life, but it's only a laundry list of specific things. And because the general principle is never delineated, what life is and what it represents, then if you're not on the laundry list of things, then you don't fit into the Constitution. And that's why people, especially conservatives, have had such a hard time with the issue of abortion, because, that is a right to life issue, the life of the fetus. Does the fetus have a right to exist, or can it be killed off? And because the Constitution really doesn't say anything, not even about the right to life of a grown adult, how in the world can we put together the weaponry to justify other or to go against other forms of killing, other ways that the right to life can be taken? So that just that alone shows you a glaring weakness in the Constitution. So yeah, just think about it. It's not unconstitutional for one citizen of the United States to murder another citizen. It's not unconstitutional. It's against the law. But why is it against the law? Because the states have to pass a law to make it unconstitutional, illegal. If it weren't for those state laws, then there'd be nothing holding a private citizen back from killing another one, at least according to this document, the Constitution. And that creates another issue that we'll talk about in another clip, the problem of federalism, this horrible cancer that the founding fathers left or put into the system, where if you're like in the border between Louisiana and Texas, and there's someone comes and kills someone else like 6 feet away from the border. Then let's say that they are on the Texas side, then the laws of Texas apply to that act, that murder. And let's say that according to Texas law, that murder deserves, well, let's say 20 years in prison. But if that murder had been committed 7 feet away from that place, 1 foot into the Louisiana border, then Louisiana law applies, and the same murder with the same intent, the same actors, the same method of murder, everything the same, in the state of Louisiana would be subject to a different set of laws. And maybe those set of laws would say, hey, you're punishable by 15 years in prison. So just the physical location of the same exact immoral act means 20 years in Texas and 15 years in Louisiana. So we have this set of inconsistencies. I'm just saying an example where the numbers are not that different, but if you think about how judgments are made in California versus Texas, you will see drastic differences in how one state treats certain actions versus another. And so we're living in this random arbitrary world where the same immoral act that has the same immoral weight of unrighteousness is weighed a certain way in one state and another way in another state. And no one knows, and no one will ever know what the right amount is. And we're living in this heterogeneous world of uncertainty. And all because we have this document that is so ambiguous, even when it comes to fundamental principles such as the right to life. So amendment, commandment number one: thou shalt not murder. Not in the Constitution. Not really. So the Constitution strikes out on that one. So now let's think about another commandment. The one that I'd consider the second most well known by people, and that is thou shalt not steal. And just like the first commandment we mentioned, this other commandment infers or implies an inherent right of the individual. It is saying that every individual has a right to his or her own property. So if I have an object of mine, a belonging of mine, and I leave it out on a table and then walk out for a second, you know, to go get a coffee or something, and maybe I'm in a public place, that object that's sitting on there at the table has this intangible quality to it, that it's my property, and even though it doesn't have my name on it, it is mine, and if anyone comes and touches it and takes it home with them without my consent, they have violated, they've crossed an invisible border, and they have violated my right to property. So that commandment reveals another human right, an individual right, the right to property, and I would dare say it's a very important one, because a society cannot function if it doesn't have that right in it. And just like the right to life, the right to property is very it's mentioned in the same two places that that we saw the right to life in the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment, and it's never really mentioned again. And if you think about it, that is an astounding thought, that the country that you could arguably call the most capitalistic nation in human history, in its foundational legal document, has absolutely no reference or no real reference to the right to private property. And because of that, because of this gaping hole in the concept of right to property, then you leave an open door for people who don't believe in the right to property to start abusing government power or personal power to take that right of property away from people. And that's when you get into the redistribution of wealth and all this other stuff that liberals are into. And they can get into that because there really is nothing, no meat, no substance in the Constitution to really make an argument for, you know, when the right to property is being violated. So again, just like with murder, you could say it and be legally correct that if someone comes and steals from you, they have not violated your constitutional rights. Just think about that. Someone can come and rob you blind and wipe your house clean, and they still have not violated your constitutional rights because it's not in the Constitution. Obviously, there's a reference to it. But it's a passing reference. If you think about it, in the Fifth Amendment, it's mentioned in the context of the government attacking your property, and the same in the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment was written in 1868, almost 100 years after the Declaration of Independence. And after all that time, the right to property is just mentioned in passing. It's like someone, you know, being on a in a relationship with another, like a man with a woman, and after 14 months of relationship, the man saying to the woman, oh, by the way, I'm not married. You know, that's how ridiculous it is for the right to property and right to life to be mentioned in passing in the 14th Amendment so casually. It should have been one of the first fundamental principles at the very beginning of the Constitution. And the reason why we have a society that has not fallen apart with everybody stealing from everybody else is because of state laws. So again, it's not unconstitutional to steal, but it is against state law. So then again, we're at the mercy of what one state decides versus another. And there is no attempt anywhere in the American system to really establish concrete ideas, parameters on what the right to property is about, when it's violated, when it's not violated, and that gaping hole, legal hole, just opens so many doors for so many things to happen, and that's why you have states like New York, California, and other states just abusing the their authority or, well, pseudo-authority to take money from people and ruining their own economies in the process and stymieing the economy. So right there, Second Commandment and the that we have looked at and the U.S. Constitution, again, is striking out. So when people start saying that the Constitution was founded on the Ten Commandments, it really shows that they have neither read the Constitution or thought about what they're saying. They really don't know what they're talking about. And let's look at another commandment quickly. We'll look at two more, hopefully, before making this clip too long. The third commandment that people would remember the most, I would dare say, if you ask people on the street, would be, thou shalt not commit adultery. And that commandment obviously is not, at least in the literal sense, in the Constitution. And neither would I be partisan to the idea of putting it in the Constitution, because that commandment talks about things that are more at a higher spiritual level that cannot be legalized. There are certain moral principles that you cannot put, that you cannot just put into law in a literal sense, because they are not intended to be enforced through brute force or raw law. They operate at a higher level, and they must, and there are certain moral principles that must be enforced at a higher spiritual level. So I'm not advocating that that commandment about adultery should be in the Constitution, but just like with the other two commandments we saw, there is something. There's a fundamental right that is being implied from that commandment. And without going into too many details, I can tell you that the right that is inherent, the right that is being violated unwittingly by people, you know, when adultery is committed, that right is in the Constitution, but in a very, very, very ambiguous way. And that commandment, you could say, is more or less, just to give you a hint, is more or less mentioned in a certain subtle way in the Third Amendment, the one that says, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. And you would say, what does that have to do with thou shalt not commit adultery? There is a connection, and hopefully we'll talk about that in a future audio clip. But suffice it to say that that commandment is clearly not in the Constitution, at least not in an explicit way. And that has opened the doors to so many problems. And without saying too much at this point, that right that is not clearly delineated in the Constitution has affected the debate on abortion to a great extent. That's why when people who are pro-abortion or anti-abortion, they cannot really go to the Constitution to get much backing on anything, because the Constitution is so ambiguous about this this fundamental right, and it's not there. So Third Commandment that we've looked at, and the Constitution again strikes out. And let's look at one final one. I don't know how many people remember this one, but if you had to forcefully say what is the fourth most remembered commandment, it would be, I would say, thou shalt not bear false witness. And obviously that is talking about libel, someone smearing someone else's reputation. All of that fits into that commandment. And so it talks about, it implies a certain right that your reputation cannot be tarnished by someone else. And so, and obviously that includes libel. And the question becomes, is that mentioned at all in the Constitution? And I could be wrong on this, and someone could correct me on this, but I don't think it's anywhere in the Constitution. So again, we go back to the same thing, that you can commit libel and still not violate someone's constitutional rights. You can slander someone and still not violate that person's rights, at least from the constitutional perspective. And because there is really no mention of libel in any significant way in the Constitution, then you have this horrible debate about the uncertainty of where freedom of speech begins and where libel, where freedom of speech ends and libel begins. So if someone says something about someone else, and they're just expressing their opinion, when is that freedom of speech a violation of the person's right to a fair reputation? There's no clarity on it. So the places where there'd be an opportunity to explain where the freedom of speech ends, is never, that opportunity is never taken in the Constitution. That's why we never seem to know exactly what people can say, what people cannot say. And then, and because of that ambiguity, we have the people, the fascist Democrats, going around censoring people on social media, because the Constitution is not blatantly clear about what can or cannot be said or what can or cannot be done. And some might argue, yeah, we have enough ammunition in the Constitution to fight the censorship. Maybe you could argue that, but the problem is that because the Constitution is not loud or clear enough on the subject, then you have to fight an uphill battle to prove that this is true or this is not true, that this is valid, this is not valid. So we've seen four commandments, and none of them are in the Constitution, and there's six more, and I would dare say that, we could talk about other commandments, and most of them are not in this document. And how can a document that is intended to be a foundational document for an entire legal system and an entire new nation not even bother to talk about these fundamental rights, leaving it all to the states? So if my rights get violated in the states, you know, you're on your own, tough luck, because the Constitution has nothing to say to defend me or protect me in a transcendental way. I hope that this thought experiment or thought exercise was helpful in showing these glaring weaknesses in this document that American conservatives, and especially conservative Christians, worship so much. It is really not the sacred document that a lot of people make it out to be, and we need to be aware of that so that we can correct things and build a better write a new, better constitution and form a more perfect nation. We cannot live with this this rag and be wearing it and still be proud of it. It's full of holes. And yes, it was a starting point, but it was never intended to be the ending point. And we've made it an ending point. We have eternalized it. We have deified it and put it on a pedestal that it does not belong in. And it doesn't mean that we have to hate it or anything like that. It's just that we have to recognize what it really is so that we can change it and rescue this nation from the downhill slope it's on. Thank you.